Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Leinster looking for their fourth European Cup title. Racing looking for their first. 2 years on from their final defeat to Saracens. And off we go.
It is going to be Eli Barron now. It's just his second European start all season. He played in the game against Leicester in October. Sweeps it off the tee. Oh, that's a wonderful kick. And what a settler that is for him and for his team after that blow, losing Pat Lambie. Thumping sound off the back of the ball. Over it goes. And Liam, we have played 16 minutes. It's Leinster 3, Racing 3.
But it just goes to show how we were talking before the game, how Leinster have the ability to be under monstrous levels of pressure and still stay composed.
Mary Barron's penalty is bound towards the post, and it's through the post. Leinster trail for the fourth time. Cool heads, composure, clinical execution is what Leinster need now in Spain. It's right smack bang in the middle of the field to put Leinster in front for the first time. Strikes it, will it have the legs? It certainly won't. It just drifted away. I think he had the distance.
And that'll give Racing a little emotional lift.
There's going to be a moment here, and some player's going to regret it for the rest of his career. Someone's going to do something, either positive or negative, and take this game. It's so close. And the longer it stays close, the more that Racing are in the game. Yes, my gift to you.
Yeah. If Johnny Sexton doesn't manage to kick this one, or is he even going to be kicking it? Issa Lathewa was going to be kicking this. Lathewa to bring us level, strokes it effortlessly. Bottle of the highest order from Issa Lathewa. It's an absolute gimme, and Leinster are going to lead into the dying seconds of this European Cup final. The flags go up. Two kicks from Easton as they were. Leinster have come from 3 points down in the final 10 minutes, and they lead for the first time in the game with 90 seconds remaining. Tallis wants it. He's ready. He's poised. Is this to be the moment? Eli Barron to Remy Tallis. Has he kicked it? It's spinning to the left. It's gone way wide. And Leinster are the European champions for the fourth time.
There we are, Leinster European champions for a fourth time. They go level with Toulouse. They've firmed up their position amongst European royalty, and it's yet another extraordinary achievement for Irish rugby in the professional era this season. We have Eddie Jones and Shane Jennings with us. Shane, I saw Mike Ross on Twitter. I know you're a big Twitter fan. Mike Ross was joking that the win has made all his Leinster gear out of date. That fourth star is going to look very nice on the jersey.
Yeah, isn't it just? I think his clothes are probably... don't fit him very close after he retired, so I don't know where he's coming out with that excuse. But it was just brilliant. Like, as a obviously a former player for Leinster, you look back now and you're so proud that you're kind of associated with a club and a team that can go on and kick on. Like, when I was young, I was looking at the likes of Toulouse and these kind of teams where they were consistently winning Europe. So that's what Leinster are now, and what a way to do it. Like, they were under pressure. They were physically bashing each other, and they just found a way to get it done. So trying not to show my bias, but it was just such a brilliant, brilliant day and an occasion. And I'm so happy for everybody involved, because I've former teammates that I played with, former teammates who are players, and the likes of Gerv, like you said there, has been in the news. He's been there for 23 years. Like, it's an incredible way for him to finish up, and he deserves a huge amount of credit with the likes of kind of John Fogarty and these guys in the backroom staff who've put in some serious time, and it's just brilliant.
Yeah, you're allowed to be biased for tonight, no problem.
Yeah.
Like, even when you talk about the company that Leinster are in now, so the joint record holders of the competition, they are European royalty. It's almost slightly surreal to talk about it in those terms. And I think it was Gerry Thornley today, it was put to Leo Cullen that Toulouse won their fourth in 2010. And at that stage, the prospect of Leinster somehow catching them and being on four as well within 7-8 years was a very remote one. Even Leo Cullen was kind of saying, yeah, it is a bit mad, the level of success that Leinster have had since that first one.
Yeah, it's funny, like when we won it in 2009, you break the back and you kind of get confidence, say, okay, we actually can achieve this. And then very quickly you get completely, whether you justify it or not, you get completely just engage in it. You become so greedy for success and hungry for success, and you don't want anybody else lifting your trophy or touching your trophy. I remember I heard a Kilkenny hurler saying it when they were playing Galway a few years ago at a half time. He was saying, "How dare they put their hands on our trophy?" And I was like, "Arrogant son of a." But that was their mind frame, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. And I think a lot of Leinster players, as do other players in other teams, when they have success, feel that way. Leinster feel they have a right to win these things, and when you go out and you do it and you've done it for a fourth time, you're like, yeah, we don't want anybody else doing it. And I think when we did it in 09, and then I always had confidence in 2011 against Northampton, I just thought we'd beat them. I kind of had, from playing against them in England, I felt our character, our skill set, everything about us, we were just a better team. And even the way it was a bit of a disaster first half, how we came back that day, we found a way. Obviously against Ulster, we played very well. And since then, you've kind of gone, God, when can we do it again? And I'm just happy for this group, because I think as a neutral or as a fan of Leinster, I think they played some unbelievable rugby and they probably justifiably won the competition. And I think it's nice when a team deserves to win it and they go out and do it. Now, some people might disagree, but I think genuinely that's how I feel. I think they genuinely deserve to win it.
No, I mean, look, people are already asking if this is their greatest ever triumph, because just for the second time in the history of the competition, the winner has gone unbeaten right across the entire season. And not just that, Leinster have done it the hard way. Table toppers in the Premiership they've beaten. Also the top team in the top 14. Glasgow, obviously, top of their group in the Pro 14, home and away, put 55 points on Glasgow, back-to-back European champions in Saracens, and then the Pro 12 champions destroyed in the semis, and then Racing, who have been, in two European Cup finals in the last 3 years and won a French title not so long ago as well. So they have done this the hard way. Eddie Leo Cullen praised what he called a strange, ugly kind of a win. It wasn't a brilliant spectacle. Between the weather and the, in some ways, brilliant Racing approach, Leinster never got much flow.
Yeah, I think the weather had a big part to play in that. Once it started raining, I think it was again suiting Racing's game plan. They didn't really want to engage probably in Leinster with an open run and gun game. They felt they could probably outmuscle them, although we know that that's a very hard thing to do. Exeter couldn't do it. But there was times when Leinster actually, you could see them trying to open up a bit, and they weren't far away. They were a couple of half line breaks, and you felt on a drier day, over the 80 minutes, they would have probably created more and probably won by more in the end. So I don't think the weather suited Leinster at all. But then again, I was confident that if it came down to trench warfare, as it pretty much was, they would have the experience and they'd have the kind of wherewithal to get it done as well. Because I've been saying this for a while, this Leinster team, you know, to be fair to them, are capable of beating you different ways. They can go about their business in different ways. They're not just a one-trick pony, and they're very good at it. And I wasn't really worried even going into the last few minutes when Racing sneaked ahead. I always felt Leinster get another shot and they'd take it. And even then, once they got level and they got field position, I just knew they were going to get it done. And even when Racing went upfield and Talley's basically bottled the drop goal, I mean, I don't think he ever really wanted to own it the way he set up. And it looked the way he left his foot. He didn't have any interest in it. Which is surprising, because it would have, you know, probably pushed into extra time. But I even felt then extra time was just kind of delaying Racing's execution. You know, I think Leinster at that stage had one hand on the trophy, so I was quietly confident. Now, you never know, it's a final, it's a one score game, a ball bounces the wrong way, someone like Teddy Thomas, who basically lost the game from by running into touch, but he gets a line break and he's gone, you know, and that's always a possibility. But on a balance of performance, I just thought Leinster were exceptional, you know, and they managed the conditions better than Racing. They were more disciplined. Racing gave away silly penalties very early in sets. You know, you didn't have to take them through too many sets to get a penalty, whereas Leinster were forcing them to work very hard. So I just on a balance, I wasn't worried. But look, once a one-score game, you never know. But having said that, I think the way they've won the tournament, undefeated, and the scalps they've taken on the way to winning it, you know, they are the best team in Europe. And I've been saying that for a while, and, you know, it was great to see them back it up on Saturday when it really counted.
Shane, what was going on at the breakdown That's what I mean. Very rarely did. I was about to tell people the Netherlands had gone 1-0 up on Ireland, which they have from a corner, and it's a goal which has been coming. And just as I look now, there is a massive pylon of Irish bodies because Ireland have equalised about a minute later. So it's 1-1 after 63 minutes in the European Championship quarter final. And Netherlands scored from a corner for all their pressure. And just now we're seeing Ireland have equalised. And this is not a game where Ireland have had many chances. Ball lumped into the box, falls to player edge of the area, strikes it and into the far corner. So it's 1-1 in that European Championship quarter-final. Amazing, really. Ireland have not really been in this game much. So the breakdown, Shane, Leinster didn't get much quick ball. Eddie mentioned the conditions, for sure that's a factor. But it seemed like, if you were to take a random 2 minutes of this game, it would have been Leinster in possession, really slow ball, Racine bodies everywhere, and then Racine unbelievably quick up off the line. I mean, it was like they must have been offside for a reasonable proportion of those moments. But it was a really sticky, messy game for Leinster to try and build much.
Yeah, it was a sticky game, but I think you have to give credit to Racing as well. They had a game plan going into it, and I think the likes of, not to overhype Dunnock or Ryan, but obviously having the understanding of playing against Leinster and how to frustrate, how to try and impose your game. But like, you look at the Racing pack, like Eddie Benaru over the ball is unbelievable. Camille Chatta over the ball as well. Like, they're two front rowers who are really good on the ball, and then you're excluding their back rowers. So like, just throughout their squad, big physical confrontational men, Nakawar, like these fellas are big specimens, and if they're on their game, and like all French teams are, if you want to ding or you want to fight, they're the people to have it with, because that's what they're used to. And I think they're very comfortable when it's like that, when it's confrontational. And I think you just have to give them a lot of credit for it. They frustrated. There was one stage, I think there was some turnover, and Nianga was hooping and hollering and bitching and moaning at everybody, just trying to rise everybody. So you can see the emotional investment they had in it. Mm. And when you're playing against a team like that, it's very difficult and frustrating. But again, I think it says a lot about the team. Like, it wasn't their perfect performance. They weren't let probably have a perfect performance, but yet they kind of held on to possession for large periods of time. Yes, they got frustrated, but they found, I keep saying it, they just found a way to kind of get over the line. And I think I agree with Eddie, what he said, and the majority of people, I think, with the amount of possession, and they were still kind of there. Both teams didn't really look like they were going to score, but Racing really didn't. I think they were just happy to defend, and they've been very good at defending. They've got a good record in it. So
yeah, the best defense in the top 14, actually.
You know what I mean? Like, so, like, I was just kind of glad the likes of Dan Carter weren't going to come on as subs and things like that. And it's so funny when you go into a game, you're expecting, God, this has the potential to be just an unbelievably exciting game, high skill level, you're hoping for a few tries. Mm. But it was captivating as well, because it was so tense and it was so nail-biting, and they just had to find another way to try and obviously get points. And I think it says a lot about the players that are there, like young guys who found a different way to win, where they had to roll up their sleeves and just kind of dig it out. And it's not often you'd see Tadhg Furlong come off where you go, God, he wasn't the best player on the pitch, you know. And there was other guys who stepped up on the day who just were immense, because they were just, it's a nice way to win where you just roll up your sleeves against a really good team. So you have to really give Racing credit, because they're a very good team.
Yeah, I saw a quote from Sean Cronin afterwards where he was saying that all week they couldn't believe the spread in the betting, you know, a 10-point spread, that he said, come on, it's crazy, they've internationals all over the team, was certainly his feeling. Now, to what extent did Wayne Barnes contribute to this poor spectacle, Eddie?
I think, considering the type of day it was, he did okay. I thought he was very lenient on them when they slapped the ball down. I mean, there should have been a yellow card for a second one. I think he didn't want to make a decision that could be traced back to the costing the team the game. And even at the end there, I think it would have had to been, when Racing were building the pressure to try and get something to tie the game, it would have had to been a blatant penalty before he was going to put out his arm. And Leinster were never going to be that stupid to give him away a blatant penalty. But I think that he did manage the game as best he could. It was very physical, and because of the conditions, it was very attritional. And for him, games like that are often difficult. He's not particularly comfortable in those attritional games, but I think overall he did okay. I just thought he let Leinster down with those slap downs that went, especially the second one, went unpunished. I could see why the first one would have been a harsh shell over the second one. Was it was a a yellow straight up, you know, and he backed out of that. But other than that, he did okay. I think, to be fair to Racing, as Shane said, they did have their game plan. Their game plan was to attack Leinster at the breakdown, not let Leinster play. And given the conditions and the physicality they can bring, they achieved that. Maybe Leinster, if you were to be critical, you know, and it's hard to be criticizing the one the champions of Europe, but they maybe probably look back and they would have probably expected more of a contest at the Rock and maybe put more resources in to make sure they had the ball because they were better equipped to use it. But look, that's said Monday morning quarterback. As I said, they adapted well. It was an ugly game, but you know, when you win ugly, it doesn't matter, particularly in a final. So I thought overall, if you were invested in the game like we were watching Leinster, or you know, it was intriguing.
Yeah,
it wasn't as great spectacle. But if you paid your mind to the game as a neutral, you'd be disappointed. But look, who cares? It's a final, and that's all that matters. Nobody is going to go back in a few years' time and say Leinster won their fourth European Championship. Why it wasn't a great game? Nobody gives a hoot.
No, it's true. Racing, in some respects, will count themselves slightly unlucky, Eddie. Like Dan Carter ruled out pre-kickoff, and what they might have done with him in the last 10 minutes would have been interesting. And then obviously Machinot was out and they lose Pat Lambie after a couple of minutes. I mean, they've got their third choice number 10. Teddy Ibrahim was absolutely amazing. I mean, they didn't actually miss Machinot as much maybe as people might have predicted, but to lose Lambie and Carter, I mean, they'll probably be looking around thinking, God, on another day we might have had this.
Well, I thought Teddy Ibrahim did a good job at kicking. His kicking game was excellent. And not just all of his place kicking.
Yeah.
But his kicking on a hand, he really got great length and accuracy. But I just thought what he did, which didn't help him, is he slowed down the ruck ball to glacial speed. He was always having a conference between the players he's going to give it to before he gave it to them. And he dragged the backside out of it a few times, right. In fairness. Like, the ball was out under the law, and Barnes was getting a bit testy with him for not using it.
Yeah.
And he let Leinster come around a couple of times to make him speed up. So I thought he didn't manage the tempo of the game. I thought there was times he could have got the ball away quicker and got, you know, racing on the front foot. And that's why I think Machinot was missed. I thought Machinot missed for his kicking, but in fairness, that wasn't the issue. I thought just to understand the tempo of the game, he didn't have that experience. I think I was surprised actually earlier in the week when they named the team and they had named Carter on the bench, because I thought, look, you're going into a game, the other team are in huge great form, and they've won the best fly halves in the world in Johnny Sexton, who's going to boss the game, and probably the only guy that available for Racing that was Dan Carter. He could stand toe to toe with Sexton and eyeball him and say, listen, let's go at it, you know. I don't think Pat Lambie would have that gravitas, and I don't think he'd bring that experience. And I thought, particularly with Machinot out, Racing would have used Carter as a very experienced influence on managing the game, and particularly conditions we knew all week weren't going to be great. But obviously he was injured and they kept that under wraps, so they ended up, you know, with Lambie, and he would have been fine. But I think Remy Tallis had zero impact on the game. I mean, at no point did you feel, you know, you've seen out half go through a game and he doesn't have an impact and you wonder what was he doing, and it just shows that he was so far off the pace, and that's why at the end I don't think he was the man to go to drop the goal, even though they had nobody else. So I think when you put those into perspective, you know, had Carter started, had Machinot been fit, you know, maybe in the conditions you could see how Racing might have nicked it. But I don't think with the hand that were dealt that we're going to take Leinster on the day. I just think Leinster had too much composure and too much experience and too much skill.
Johnny Sexton, I noticed Shane mentioned Dan Levy and James Ryan in particular of the younger players who've come through. James Ryan, 21 years old, 21 games unbeaten. I don't think Paul O'Connell hadn't made his debut for Munster at 21. This guy has a Grand Slam and a European Cup now and is just a phenomenon. And then Dan Levy, 20 carries and 17 tackles. I don't know what were good stats for you in terms of carries and tackles in a game, but this guy's hitting close to 20 on each most games.
I've no idea, to be honest.
That means you're too embarrassed to say. 4 carries, 7 tackles.
No, Joe, give us a bit of credit.
But they're both phenomenal.
Ridiculously good, genuinely. Quite remarkable what James, and like there was a picture, I don't know what paper it was in, and it was when Tallis was taking the drop goal, and there was, it's such a brilliant picture when you're part of a team where there was like 4 or 5 guys going for the block down. I think one was
Jack Cohen,
James Ryan,
was there
Jack
as well.
Cohen, yeah. Fardy, James Gibson Park. They're all just putting their bodies on the line, going for like any team would. But it just, I think, just epitomised the hunger, the impact the subs had. But like for James Ryan to put in a shift like that and to be up trying to block a goal speaks a lot about him. Like, he's pretty remarkable, you know.
Has he taken people by
that's the challenge.
Well, yeah. Has he taken people by surprise? I mean, like Keane Healy saying when he first came across him, he was a skinny beanpole type, and they knew he'd be pretty good. But it seems he's even taken people a little bit by surprise. Seems to have a very mature head on his shoulders, as well as what people are saying about him.
Yeah, doesn't he just? And I think coming from underage system, he's been somewhat of a leader in terms of captaining teams or being one of the kind of the senior leadership teams amongst his peers and things like that. But apart from any of that, the credit is justified. You know, it's not, oh, we'll give him a run and, you know, he'll mature and he'll get better and he'll harden up, this, that and the other. Yes, he'll do all of those above, but he's made an impact and he's played, like what you say, 21 games there.
Yeah,
he's played in Paris, he's played in Twickenham, he's played against best teams in England, best team over the last number of years in Saracens, and he's dominated his opposition. He's made an impact. Mm. I just think he deserves so much credit, and the people around him that have helped him in terms of Dev, I'm sure, as Fardy, who I don't know at all, but the perception would be that was a good kind of elder statesman experience in those pack for those young guys. Mm. And again, Dan Levy has like justified like credit with his performances. He showed he's got a bit of dog in him and like confrontational and physically up for the game again. And I just think they just deserve so much credit because they put in big performances where people were concerned with the likes of Sean O'Brien not being around. Then Josh goes down injured and Dan Levy's just been absolutely exceptional. The likes of James Ryan as well has just taken it and taken his opportunity, and he just deserves so much credit amongst others. And then like there's a special mention, genuinely goes to Issa, like in the performance that he had. Like the guy, not that anybody probably knows or doesn't know because he doesn't say it, but like he's been on one knee for God knows how long, and yet he's put in these performances and been able to step up and show your composure and slot kicks like that, and his influence that he's had on the other guys. So I just think it's such a nice way for him to finish. And like Rob, like you can go through the performers. Like Rob Kearney's been absolutely exceptional as well. His people were writing him off, saying he doesn't deserve this, that, and the other. And then he pulls out an unbelievable season and a performance as well. So
I think he's Ireland's most successful rugby player of all time now, Rob. Like his medals haul is fairly ridiculous. And I wanted to ask you as well, Shane, about Leo Cullen. Like you think 2 years ago, Leinster won one pool game in six, and it was looking fairly grim. And he was trying to bring through a lot of these young players. I think it was in the Irish Times, someone was pointing out, eight players under 24 the day they beat Bath in that one pool game they did win 2 years ago. But that was that looked like a tough gig for Cullen. He'd be thrown in. They probably got rid of Matt O'Connor quicker than they had anticipated. Cullen goes in. And then when Lancaster arrives, really from the outside, it felt like that was... Leo was in trouble there. He could be edged out the door. This was almost signing your own debt warrant kind of a thing. And yet they have worked together spectacularly well. Luke McGrath adding to the general chorus of approval of Lancaster. He's come in, changed our whole shape, our whole game, especially unstructured. Training has gone up to another level. Johnny Sexton talked at length about Lancaster in particular. And I'm kind of watching that thinking, it takes a real touch of class for Leo Cullen to stand there, as has happened most of the season, and allow Lancaster his head and allow him get the plaudits and allow people talk about the two of them on an equal footing for the better of Leinster. It's a really extraordinary thing we've seen in the last 2 years. Very, very rare.
Yeah. And I only have a perception of what goes on and what you hear, like you said there, from what players say. But I think from knowing Leo and from the outside looking at what has happened, I think it first of all shows Leo incredible leadership and incredible self-awareness. Would have been a huge steep learning curve, like anybody going into that position in those circumstances as a head coach. And then, sure, he was in his infancy, trying to find his feet, trying to get what he's comfortable at, and to have, like I said, the self-awareness to say, okay, hold on a sec, for the betterment of the coaching team, for the betterment of the players, let's bring in someone with that kind of experience. And the opportunity was there for Stuart Lancaster to come in, and, you know, he had obviously a very challenging pass before coming into that, and I think it was a breath of fresh air and a release of life, or a new lease of life for him to go back coaching. And I think it was just a very good balance. But I also would reiterate the point of the likes of the backroom staff, like John Fogarty, who had been there with Gervin Dempsey and these kind of guys in and around that younger environment and have kind of come through the system with them, whether it was the sub-academy and the academy and then obviously into the senior team. So they were quite comfortable in terms of, actually, do you know what? What we're saying here is what we want to do. And I'm backing myself as a scrum coach, or I'm backing myself as the head coach, because I know long term we've got a plan and we've got a vision. Mm. And I think they stuck together with each other. And I think not just the coaching staff, the backroom staff, like, it takes so much effort for a squad to be successful like this. And I think adding the quality like Stuart Lancaster to that, it just shows great vision, great leadership, and unbelievable self-awareness to, you know what, listen, I know he's the top of the log, and if you're the head coach, you're the person responsible, but to have that understanding is really impressive. And whether it's like that in reality, I don't know, because we're on the outside, but it seems that way. Mm. And it seems like they've got a very comfortable relationship and it's working. So it's so good to see.
Yeah. I do want to ask about Munster next week, but Eddie, a stupidly forward-looking question, if and when Joe Schmidt goes, do you now almost see Cullen and Lancaster as a double act? Like, if you're looking for the next Irish management team, do you almost approach the two of them rather than separate them, I wonder, is an interesting question.
I think there's a lot of logic in that, because, you know, as Shane outlined there, it was a big call for Leo to make. And, you know, he had the confidence and the bravery to do it. And Lancaster has really, you know, fitted in very well. And, you know, I suppose people are beginning to realise, oh, initially when things turned around, Stuart Lancaster got an awful lot of credit, which is fair enough, because he obviously had a big partner. But Leo kept his head down and get numbered. But now I think you're seeing to emerge is that it's been a very good a team effort in the sense of both coaches working very well with each other. So, yeah, I think they gel very well. They've got a good kind of a yin and a yang, I guess, and everyone's pretty happy around them. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that if they're working that well together, keeping them together would recreate that with Ireland. So I think that's definitely a possibility. It would make, there'd be a lot of logic to it. Whether it'll happen or not is another question. But certainly, you know, this season in particular, I think they have really, like last year, you know, things went wrong in against Claremont, and things went wrong in the Pro 12, and people weren't sure. But this year, they've really got their house in order, and everything's clicked together well. Mm. So I think, yeah, as its coaching team, they're outstanding, and like, no one's arguing with the fact that this is now the best outfit in Europe. And when I say outfit, I mean not just team, but the whole unit, and that includes the coaches.
Yeah. In the shorter term, Shane, I presume they had a big night out on Saturday, maybe another big night out last night. There's an element, you've been in this position where you've got Pro 12 or now Pro 14 duty after a European win. Assess bodies, see how everyone is, see how tired people are, try and muster some kind of training sessions across the week, whereas Munster have probably been focusing on nothing but this game for quite some time. Is it as difficult as it seems from the outside? Certainly Leinster have struggled at times in the past to follow up European success by doing the double. They've never done it.
Yeah, no, it is difficult. And understandably, it's not so much obviously the physical toll, but the emotional toll as well. Right. Obviously, leading up to a final and playing such a close, tense final like that, and how physical it was as well. So obviously, your body and your mind is exhausted, and then you go out in 2 days on the sauce, and you're struggling on that as well. But the reality is, it is Munster, and the difficulty of this is it's a semi-final. It's not a final. Usually it was a final on a final, so you go, come on, one more game. Whereas I think they're going to, well, from what I would see, they've got such good depth. Like, you'd love to see the likes of Jack Conan or Reese or someone to inject, or Jack McGrath, these kind of guys who've been probably frustrated, wanting to get in.
I know, I feel bad every time I see James Lowe in a suit. I'm sure he's itching.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So they've got those guys who are fresh, who are hungry, and as much as they're all a part of that victory at the weekend, players want to play in finals, players want to play in semifinals, as much as they're happy afterwards and they all celebrate together, which is the right thing because they are a part of it. But there's a bit inside you where you just go, listen, I don't fully deserve that because I didn't play. So you'd hope those guys who are on the sides, in the thereabouts of the squad, get an opportunity this weekend, and with obviously the guys who are going to be able to back it up. But like, they're super fit. Like, the fitness isn't a question. It's just the emotional energy that you've drained out of your body, and then preparing what's going to be another massively physical game. Yeah. But it's so exciting because it hasn't been done, the double. So that's something, you know, that they actually have in their sights that they can achieve if they get past Munster to win a final. But big ask, because Munster, obviously, I would say, are licking their lips, and rightly so.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game. Lads, we'll leave it there. Eddie O'Sullivan, Shane Jennings, thanks very much.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers, Joe.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.